From WCVE News, I'm Angela Messino with WCVE's digital team. I'm here with Robert Krulwich, the co-host of Radiolab, WNYC's Peabody Award-winning program about big ideas. I think that the station has asked me specifically to interview you, Robert, because I have been a huge fan since college. You are able to really connect, it seems, with millennials. And I was wondering why you think that is, and why do you think that listeners connect so strongly with Radiolab in particular?
At first, because the program is a kind of cross-generational kind of team thing. So the guy I work with, Jad, is about 25 years younger than me. And it was concerning to me when we started that, because I said, let's try it about science. And he said, okay. And he said, but can I put in my beats? I said, absolutely. So we did this kind of combo thing. And then I wondered, like, who would listen to this? For people who don't know the program, this is just going to sound odd. But we tell you things that are hard, perhaps, you know, initially to think about. But while we play with it and talk about it and make it loud, make it soft, and make it easy and make it grim and make it all these colors, I think what seems to happen is people can lean on the music, and it helps them hear the concepts. And it's sort of a miracle.
I think one of the things that I'm very attracted to for Radiolab is that it makes the sciences accessible. What's your secret, and how do you think educators and parents can really learn from this?
I think what happens is we are both legitimately curious about the things we talk about. So this is not because we were trained in it. This was not because we have read a lot of books about it. This is because questions occur and you think, like, I wonder what the answer to that is. So it's honestly curious. That's the thing. So if you have a subject like why are animals kind to each other? If Darwinian evolution says that it's tooth and claw, survival of the fittest, struggle, then why would a bird give up the chance to make a new bird and just help its parents raise some eggs? Like, what's going on with that bird? Is it like a loser bird? And those are more or less the terms we ask these things in. And then we go to really smart people, but we don't change our vocabulary. We're just stupid in front of them. And then sometimes we get it all wrong, and we put the corrections in front. So really what we're modeling is we're like, let's suppose you were brave enough. And it is an act of some bravery. Brave enough to be curious, then you would end up talking to people who are smarter than you are about things you don't understand in first blush, that you argue about constantly, and then you only get right on the third repetition after taking a singing break. You know, that's what we do, all those things.
Since Radiolab is intended to explore human curiosity, can you tell us about a time that a story took a turn that really surprised or inspired you?
Oh. It is shocking or thrilling or simply sigh-worthy, like, when you learn something. There was just a moment. We were trying to figure out where music comes from. And so we thought, well, probably it has something to do. Maybe it has something to do with gesture, like, or maybe it has something to do. Maybe people, you know, cave people listen to bird songs. Well, we could do that, you know. Or maybe they just took the ocean sounds or babbling brooks and tried to turn that into. Or maybe it was mommy speech. Like maybe cave mommies went. And that there was something musical. But we didn't know. So we found somebody who proposed to us that maybe music actually springs out of ordinary speech. So how would that work? And then she showed us something. She took a tape that she'd made of an ordinary person talking in ordinary sentences, and she took a chunk of a sentence. Sometimes things behave so strangely, was the phrase. Sometimes things behave so strangely. And she looped it. So it was sometimes things behave so strangely. Sometimes things behave so strangely. Sometimes things behave so strangely. Sometimes things behave so strangely, so on. And then once you listen to it, you could hear that there was something. And then we paused for a while. And then she played us back the original sentence from which that came. And it was so interesting. The person was talking, but when he said, matter-of-factly, sometimes things behave so strangely, it sounded like, and like it leapt from speech straight into song. And it's so surprising and so startling and so there that that is the sort of thing we love to do all the time. We love to create a situation where you can hear the moment of discovery for yourself as if it was happening to you, which in that particular case, to everyone listening, it did. Like that, you could hear it happen.
So how does Radiolab find these stories that are often forgotten and left out of our history and science books?
So if you get a subject in mind, like snail sex, this is not something that would come up in ordinary conversation, but snails are hermaphrodites. So they have penises and they also have vaginas. They have both. So I was just thinking one day, I said, gosh, that must be complicated. I mean, it's hard enough being a boy with a girl, like, you have a boy have boy urges, girls have girl urges. But if you had both urges at this, so I called up a lady who knew all about, she had a pet snail and she was also a bit of a snail scientist. And she says, have you ever seen snails having sex? I said, no. She said, well, YouTube, of course, is loaded with. I said, is it? So I go and I watch these snails. They're taking an enormous amount of time. One is crawling up towards the other. One's looking down. One's looking up. They shift positions. They back off. They come back again. There's a slow, slow, slow dance going on. And then she starts on the phone to narrate to me what's going on. She said, well, let's suppose that one snail has a cold and the other doesn't. Well, the girl part of you says, I'm not going to expose my eggs to somebody who's sick. Like, I only have these few eggs. I'm not going to do that. On the other hand, the boy part of me is thinking, on the other hand, I'd love to have sex with that other person. So I would like to do it, but I don't want it to be done because I got to protect my eggs. But the male part of me says, let's go ahead and do this if we can. And the other one is thinking everything in reverse. She says, I've got a cold. Can I get away with this? And so I suddenly felt like I was in a movie, you know, and they were where there were two actors, Snail A and Snail B. There were four characters, and they were all up to various kinds of mischief. Now, Jan, in this case, said, I really don't care about this at all. You'll have to do something else to make me care. So I've never got snail sex on, but I think the research that's required is first you get on the phone and you find somebody, and then the somebody leads you to an article, and the article takes you to another article, and that leads you to another body, and so forth. And so you do days and days of looking into something. It starts with usually a dumb question, and by day three, it's fairly deep in, and you have to learn a lot of stuff, which you don't necessarily expect to tell the audience, but you do need to know always what you aren't saying, because if you know too little, you could be wrong. And since we're starting everything from scratch, pretty much, and in recent years, we've been doing a lot more public affairs and a little bit less of science, so that's even harder. But it is a serious amount of research, always.
Have any stories uncovered something that you would rather not know, or perhaps left more questions than answers?
Yeah. Sometimes the answers to simple questions get technical, and so I don't want to know that. Like one time we asked, what is it to be bad? And one of the ways we explored it was we found a man who had invented fertilizer. He'd figured out how to put nitrogen into the ground so that you can feed your plants. There's a lot of nitrogen in the air, but it doesn't go into the ground very easily. So he figured a way to get it. The air is rich with nitrogen. The plants are hungry for nitrogen. He said, I figured out a way to bake what's in the air and stick it in the ground. An enormously wonderful thing to do. And what he did next, after having pretty much revolutionized feeding, is he invented mustard gas so that he could kill Russian soldiers at the front for the Kaiser and then kill Canadian soldiers and British soldiers and French soldiers and American soldiers in the other side. And he loved killing them. And he loved saving them with food. And we got interested in him. Like, what kind of a person can be so both? And I found that a very troubling exercise. Because, you know, it more or less confirmed what you know, which is that an angel has a dark spot and a dark person has, and an evil person has a touch of angel in them. It's just that we are always a plurality. We're never a one thing. And that no matter how good a person is, they have the potential to be bad and vice versa. And to lose a fairy tale world where there are really kind and good people to this much more probably realistic but sadder world where everyone is a candidate for either, was I found very hard to do.
So what keeps you curious then?
Oh, my genes, I think. My mom was one of those people who could get on an escalator with a perfect stranger and whatever it takes to get one flight up to like the women's dress department or something, so that would be like maybe a 30-second ride, maybe 45 seconds. By the time my mother got to the top, the woman next to her would say, so I said to him, if you want a divorce, you can have a divorce. But why would you want to get divorced to a soldier? And I said, how did my mother like learn that much that quickly? But then I noticed my sister had it, and I guess I have it. I can just, I do not, like my wife is a New York Times reporter, and she's always afraid of running out. And she's a little bit surprised. I never seem to feel I'm near the bottom of what I want to know.
Why should we stay curious then?
Why should you stay curious? Just because it's more fun than being not? I mean, look, if you are the kind of person who thinks that they don't want to know anything, that you've got your friends, you have your favorite sports, you have your favorite foods, you know everything you need to know, you think, and then somebody tells you something that you didn't know, I defy you to tell me that if it's something that is either beautiful or funny or surprising, that you don't get a little jolt of happiness. Because part of being live is to be surprised. It's deeply mysterious that we're here at all. And that we have brains that can think about our being here at all, that we are aware of death and that we are aware of love and that we feel we feel the love anyway. We don't want to feel the death. It is a deeply mysterious situation to be in. And so I just assume that everybody that has heard our show or everybody that hasn't heard our show, which is most people, would be easily gettable, toable. All we have to do is tell them something that they didn't know in a way that they can understand, in a way that makes them feel something, surprise, danger, excitement, astonishment, something. And I just think that's part of being alive.
Thank you so much, Robert Krolwich, for stopping by the station. Once again, this is Robert Krolwich, the host of Radio Lab, and I'm Angela Messina with WCVE's digital team.